he's busy going to Alabama every 6 months to shoot some low-budget thriller with an adjective title, and he plays a he plays a demon caster.
Welcome to Sincast, presented by CinemaSins.
Alright everybody, welcome to the Sincast. This is Chris Atkinson from CinemaSins, joined as always by the voice of CinemaSins, Jeremy Scott.
Oh, hey there!
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and from MBS, Barrett Scher.
Hello!
Oh, big Hello. Gay Al in the house. I don't know why, just
well,
made
it's
you
more,
gay.
Yeah, sorry. Isn't that more like how Seinfeld's family parents?
That's true, were? Jerry!
Oh,
Hello!
Hello!
Oh my god, hold on. I'm sorry, before we start, there was this thing on Twitter yesterday of every, like a hit song from every year that Seinfeld was around set to the Seinfeld score.
Mm.
So it was like Tom Petty is like, so I'm free. And it's like, boom, 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 boom. And then they had Nirvana Smells Like Teen Spirit. And he was like, hello. And it was like, boom, boom, boom. And then it cut to Uncle Leo like, hello. Sorry.
It's so good.
It's been a while since we've ranted, I think. It's been a while. So surely something's built up inside you.
I feel like I'm taking crazy pills.
I'm as mad as hell.
You've never seen me very upset.
Lord Jesus! Lord Jesus!
Who's the angriest?
I think you are.
I'm not angry, but I'm something. All right, so I'm at the store the other day.
Mm.
This is yesterday, literally yesterday, and I saw a product that I want to talk to you all about.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go back in time for a second. I'm a mac and cheese guy. I like mac and cheese, and I'm simple. Well, I like it fancy, but I like it simple.
Mm.
I'm a big fan of these modern microwavable single-serving cups where you peel off the lid and you put some water into the line and you microwave it for a minute and a half or 2 minutes, and then you stir in the cheese and poof, you've got mac and cheese.
Mm-hmm.
Right? All the brands make them. Mm-hmm. Kraft has them. Velveeta has them. Annie's Organic Frou Frou has them, right? You've seen them. Cracker Barrel has them. They even make now, about a year ago, I started noticing twice as big. So it's like two single servings.
Nice.
It's a double serving, but it's not quite as much as a whole box would make, right? And you microwave that thing for 3.5 minutes. Mm-hmm. Stir in the cheese. You got mac and cheese. I also like to take leftover charred hot dogs from the grill. Cut them up into tiny pieces.
Yeah.
Stir that shit into the mac and cheese.
Get make your protein. Yeah.
So this new product that I see on the store shelves yesterday, as I know I've got leftover 4th of July hot dogs in my fridge, is Shells and Cheese Mini.
Mm.
Now, this is not a mini box. This is the regular rectangular box of shells and cheese, but the shells are mini.
Okay.
Now, the shells and cheese shells are already... you know, thumbnail size. They're not exactly huge pieces of pasta.
Yeah.
And they're on the box in the biggest letters. It says, cooks in half the time.
Oh.
5 minutes.
Less surface area to absorb.
That is exactly the science. But this is the most useless, ridiculous fucking product I've ever heard in my life. You have cut the boil time from 10 minutes to 5.
Mm-hmm.
I still need 10, 15 minutes for that fucking water to boil.
Correct, yeah.
So you have saved me 5 minutes out of 20 or 25 minutes. And you put this on the shelf next to a version of your product that I can microwave for 3.5 minutes and be done. Who is buying shells and cheese, going home, boiling water, and going, I wish I could only boil these for 5 minutes instead of...
Yeah, yeah.
Whose problem is this product fucking solving? No one's. Who's bemoaning the 10 minutes that hasn't already migrated over to the microwavable?
That's a good point.
Who is that person?
And plus, if you have a strainer, I've got two strainers. I've got a colander that has a fine mesh, and then I have one that's a strainer for it that has... larger gaps. I bet you lose a lot of these mini shells.
I bet you do.
Yeah.
And the point of the story is I bought the box. I ate the shell minis.
Yeah.
Tasted the same.
Well, of course, yeah.
Barely but noticed the 5 minutes saved.
You didn't notice the 5 minutes?
Barely noticed. Because it takes a fucking year to boil water, no matter what you
it's,
do.
It's kind of like the oatmeal that's instant instead of old-fashioned or whatever. Like, the instant is like 1.5 minutes or something like that.
Yeah.
And the regular's 5 minutes if you're having a cup of oatmeal or whatever. It's the same deal. You have to boil the water.
Yeah.
And then you put it in for 1.5 minutes. And usually, a lot of times, in my experience, that's why I don't get this shit anymore. And that's why it was available during the pandemic. you put it in there and the water doesn't dissolve like all the way after 1.5 minutes. You have to still cook it longer than.
Yep.
Unless you know, you're, you know, I don't know what is defined as boiling for a Quaker oak. You know, maybe I'm not boiling the water enough. I know that I boil it a certain way for the 5 minute, and the 5 minute works fine. So shouldn't it do the same for
boil
the 1.5?
Boil, yeah. Yeah.
So anyway,
I don't get it. They're solving a problem that doesn't exist. There's a consumer out there that they're targeting with this product, and he is vapor. He does not exist. He's already microwaving it. Or he's a mom, and she's already boiling the water, and 5 minutes ain't going to do shit.
All right, let me ask you this, because I haven't experienced the individual bowls. I've always gone with the boxes.
Okay.
Is there a difference in quality between the individual bowls and then making a box version?
Only if you are sloppy with the amount of water you put in. It can sometimes be a little runnier if you put too much water in.
But if you do it right,
I don't notice a quality difference whatsoever.
All right. Yeah, you're right then. Yeah.
It makes no sense to me. Somebody at Kraft or Velveeta was like, I've got a perfect idea. Shells and cheese, but half the size. And you know, probably in 6 months it'll be like a quarter of the size. Cooks in 2.5 minutes.
Eventually it's just gonna be the cheese.
Then pretty much I'll just be buying hot mac and cheese out of a case and taking it home and eating it.
Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts on the oven mac and cheese? The oven/microwave like Stouffer's type of mac and cheese. Because that's my go to if I don't do the box.
There's one they used to sell at Fresh Market until Fresh Market died, and here it's still alive as a business, and I loved it.
Yeah,
and it was like a world's famous, or it was a very braggy brand name, but I liked it.
We the best news.
I have not had the Stouffer's mac and cheese, but I jam on the Stouffer's lasagnas all the time. Yeah. So I imagine it's pretty good.
Yeah, so good quality with that. I think supersedes even the box stuff.
Homemade
is obviously the best.
Yeah, homemade is the best.
But you've opened my eyes to the individual cups, because I always thought that was sub quality.
You got to give it a try.
All right. I think you're probably next angriest.
Am I? Okay. I don't even know what your rant is.
I don't either.
Steven Dorff.
All right, I'll go next.
What a fucking punk.
Every once in a while, you got to rant about yourself. And I'm not talking about, doing some sort of self-centered, like, maybe humble brag type thing here. I'm actually going to criticize myself.
Awesome.
Right. Here. This pissed me off so much that I did this.
You pissed yourself off.
Pissed myself off.
Okay.
I was at a poker game on Friday.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody started lamenting that Regal has Pepsi products now. And they started talking about all this shit. I remembered that I went into Regal recently and saw the Pepsi. I saw the Pepsi ads. I did not go to the concession stand. Now, this was a new thing for me, because I feel like I had seen Coke ads, all the way through, even when I watched Tenet last year and everything. But I saw those Pepsi ads, and this came, I watched a movie right around the time that Coke and everybody had to have opinion about Georgia's voting laws and everything like that. And so I had this, I was like, oh, Regal switched over because they have this, you know, they don't want to, you know, they had a bunch of people get pissed off about Coca-Cola and everything. So I was like, yeah, it's fucking typical. Regal's based in Knoxville, Tennessee. They're a Southern company. They're very conservative. And so I didn't look into it or anything. I was just like, oh yeah, that's fucking typical, and just watch my movie and whatever. Now this guy at poker starts talking about, many, many months later, starts talking about that. I had gotten into my head that this was the fact that Regal changed over because of the Coca-Cola and the Georgia voting rights and all that other type of stuff. And I said, yeah, you know why, right? He goes, they changed over because of the Coca-Cola and the voting rights and all that. And everybody at the table was like, oh. And when they did that, I was like, wait a minute. Do I know that that's true?
Self-check, yeah.
And everybody just started talking about, like, yeah, I guess it makes sense, blah, 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 blah. I went and looked it up.
Mm-hmm.
They switched. They were at least planning on making the switch in January of 2020.
Oh, wow.
Oh, wow.
And I don't know if they actually made the switch during that year, because I swear I saw Coke stuff all the way, anything that I saw that year, which was everything leading up to March and then Tenet. And then in 2021, it just looked like a magical new, decision that they had made. And, the reason why I'm pissed off about myself is that even though I went back and I looked at it and I said, hey guys, look, I fucked that up. I told the poker table, I fucked that up. Mm-hmm. I thought that's what was the case, but there was even like a Twitter thing in January where Regal said, we're going to go to Pepsi, January 2020, where Regal said, we're going to hang out with Pepsi from now on. Hmm. Pepsi's a good match for us. And there was a big Twitter uproar where people were like, you know, Coke is better. I mean, it obviously is. And Regal long ago was a Pepsi.
I'm about company. To piggyback on when you're done. Yeah. I got a story.
I told the table, I was like, yeah, guys, I'm wrong. And I said, I guess I'm the fake news here. The problem is for me, even though I've corrected the record 5 seconds after I made the thing, there's still going to be some people who come out of that poker game thinking that was the truth. And they're going to go and tell people that that's what they heard. And so on. And that's how shit spreads, and you should get the shit right on the first thing. Shouldn't talk out of your ass. In my case, I was talking out of my ass, but it was kind of unknowingly talking out of my ass, mm-hmm. because I had constructed that narrative out of one experience that had just come like for months. And so it was like months after I was like sitting there going in my head, probably just constructed this thing like, oh, that's what happened. Because the time between when Regal made this decision and the pandemic and then me coming back into theaters, it looked like an instant decision.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so it looked like that was what it was. So I always, whenever I say something and I get that twinge of maybe I'm not right, go and look it up and try to make sure that you get it right. Try to at least reverse some of your damage that you've caused. And that's what I did. And I still feel bad about it.
How long was the, you said 5 seconds, but was it really short term after you said this that you looked at,
yes.
like right up?
Yes.
So yeah, you mitigated it as much as humanly possible, but you're right. At least one of those people would be like, I heard this.
Mm-hmm.
And then that person's going to tell five people and that those people are going to tell.
Yeah. 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 Now, I'm about to talk on my ass.
Okay.
Because I have not researched what I'm about to say. Okay. This is from memory. Mm-hmm. I remember working at Hollywood 27 and switching from Coke to Pepsi.
Mm-hmm.
Regal, company-wide.
Yep.
And there was a new, what do they call that fucking, you're going to know it, I forgot it, I'm a bad projectionist, the policy trailer. Mm-hmm. There was a new policy trailer for Regal that had Pepsi products in it now, mm-hmm. instead of Coke.
Mm-hmm.
And all of the Pepsi officials and all of the Regal officials flew to Nashville to go to Hollywood 27 while it was closed to the public and walk all the way down to one of the big auditoriums, I think it was 16, and watch this new policy trailer together.
The fuck?
With now Coke products on it.
Well, no, that's what I'm saying is my memory is that we were switching from Coke to Pepsi and that sometime after I left Regal, they went back to Coke.
And now they're back to Pepsi.
And now they've gone back to Pepsi.
When I first got to Hollywood 27 in 99, which was May of 99,
right.
they were serving Pepsi.
So this must have been right before that.
Must have been, yeah.
Because
they were on Pepsi for a while.
The female general manager, who I won't name, was absolutely obsessed with getting a red carpet.
She had half of the management staff calling all over town looking for a goddamn red carpet to roll out for the Pepsi people. Mm-hmm. No one asked her to do this shit. Mm-hmm. This was her trying to kiss ass on Pepsi people.
Is it because the 27 was their marquee, theater?
At the time, yeah. Okay. It was the biggest one they had, okay, and the biggest showpiece closest to Knoxville or whatever. What a fucking dumb thing to do. Let's all get together and watch a 30-second ad for our products.
It was short, right?
Yeah, it's dumb. I mean, it might have been 60 seconds. Mm-hmm. But I also remember being told by the district manager, who I won't name, that it almost always just boils down to whoever's willing to pay them the most. Because the way the soft drinks work, at least 20 years ago, is Pepsi is paying, like, basically giving the soft drinks for free to the theater and then paying them on top of it a royalty for, it's all advertising.
They don't, well, hold on. Pepsi doesn't get a cut of the revenue from the concessions?
No.
No shit.
Pepsi's doing this to be seen at every Regal so that more people will buy a Pepsi.
Interesting.
And it's just, that's why every 10, 15 years it switches back, is that somebody has a better, cuts them a better deal. This is what I was told.
Oh, that's fascinating.
By the district manager, who may have been talking out of his ass.
He literally
pointed at the bag in a box, which we called the bibs, and said, we get paid $3 or $4 for every single one of those that we sell.
Interesting. Wow.
And that was my understanding of how the soft drinks work, which is why I told everybody in my life, like, that is the biggest ripoff in the whole world.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you buy a soft drink at the movie theater, you're making everybody rich. You're making that theater double rich.
Well, yeah, and I guess
they're not paying anything for it.
You're making Pepsi rich by just investing in their
It's like naming rights on a stadium.
Yeah, yeah,
right? There's
a reason
companies pay $1 billion to name a football stick, because it's going to be on TV all the time. It's going to be in the newspaper all the time. And it's just repetition, repetition, repetition.
Interesting. Yeah. What a weird model, though.
Not to mention that, like, soft drinks, even if you were paying for them, it's like a third of a penny to fill a whole glass with sugared soda. It's
right.
Like one of the most inexpensive products to make in all of America.
And I think I remember you saying that the concession, that's how the theaters make money. The chains make money, right?
Is on concessions.
Almost all concessions, because box office, what is it, 80 to 90% goes to studio.
It starts off pretty tilted towards the studios and then moves its way towards being more favorable to the theater owners. But it hardly ever a movie that's going to be,
man, that's
that
Titanic.
Kind of,
that's why theater owners love them some fucking Titanic, because that shit made $40 million a weekend for like 7 months.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What a crazy model this whole business is.
And I also think about like back in the day, like warring with customers. This didn't happen all the time, but warring with customers about wanting to take free cups off of our and it's like, those are worth to the company however much we're charging for them, even though they are,
I remember that,
even though they are 5 cents to make or whatever.
Yeah.
And I remember how many times I got into issues with people, customers and employees over stuff like this, where, like, I remember being like just becoming a manager at my old theater, Williamson Square, and like some concession girl comes to me and says, somebody came up and just took two. We used to have our cups just lined up in front. Somebody just came up and took two cups from my thing, And I was like, just let them go. I said, you can't let them do that.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting here now, standing back from afar, going, we're just doing a lot of dirty work for some people who, you know, like, that doesn't mean anything to them. Like, they say it's, oh, this, these two cups, that's $4.50 or whatever. It's like, but really it's not. And just remember telling her that she had to go back and get those cups from these customers, which that's going to be a lot of grief. I remember her coming back and throwing the cups down on the ground, going, here you go. Cups, crying.
poor ladies were making like $5 an hour at that point. She's
and at the time, you're like, yeah, man, I fuck you. You got your cups back. Well, now 20 years later, you're like, that's us doing dirty work for people far richer than us.
Yeah, dude, and it gets even worse than that, because when I became a GM, your bonus is impacted by the inventory as a GM. So, you know, and of course, the bonus structure is now like Google's algorithm in terms of all these different factors with your payroll. And blah. I barely made a bonus ever, but if we were missing one sleeve of cups, 100 cups that just got misplaced or thrown away, I would get a bonus.
Oh, shit.
That could be a few thousand dollars to me because some paper went missing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just because that's the way the company chooses to do its accounting. They don't count the soft drink as the inventory product. They count the cup itself. It's the same with popcorn. They don't count the seed and the salt. Yeah, yeah. They count the tub and the bag. So if you lose a paper popcorn bag, that's $350.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's really messed up.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Then you get employees stealing and managers making less than your box office employees and negative bonus kicks in. Yeah, you won't be paid this month. You were missing too many cups.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ. All right. Yesterday as we record this, it was an interesting story to me. It came out. Of all people, mm-hmm. Stephen Dorff,
mm-hmm. mm-hmm.
of probably most notably Blade fame, also for me personally, he was in the Aerosmith's Crying video with Alicia Silverstone.
SFW, I know you like that movie.
What movie?
Oh, you like SLC Punk, not SFW. He's in SFW.
No, yeah, I don't like SFW. he was in Cecil B. Demented, John Waters movie from the mid-90s, probably? 96, 97? I think so.
He's a chump!
Okay. He was also in Sofia Coppola's Somewhere.
Jeremy's Iron?
A movie that I loathed. But, you know, he's hit or miss. He's a great-looking guy. Good actor. Was fine in Blade. I thought he was a good villain in Blade.
Was a e-cigarette spokesman for a while, if you remember that.
I always get him confused with Brad Dourif.
Oh.
Oh, yeah?
Not because they look the same.
Right.
Just the names.
I get him confused with Dourif on golf.
Yeah, the Tim Conway.
Yeah.
Anyway, Stephen Dorff, the legendary Stephen Dorff, decided to come out. He's got a new movie to promote called Embattled. And, you know, all right, good for him. Yeah, he's doing interviews, he's doing press and stuff like that. And he goes off on Marvel specifically, comic book movies kind of overall, but the MCU kind of specifically.
Black
and then
Widow.
Even more specifically, Scarlett Johansson, and he doesn't go off on Scarlett Johansson about Black Widow. He says if I'm remembering correctly, he says that the whole series looks like a video game, a bad video game. And that he feels embarrassed for Scarlett Johansson.
Right.
Who's also worked with Sofia Coppola.
I refuse to believe Stephen Dorff even knows what it is to be embarrassed.
So anyway, he goes off on this and says, you know, it's garbage. He intentionally makes movies that he thinks are going to be good to great. That they're going to be art. He would rather go to Cannes than he would go to a big Hollywood premiere. Now, remember, this is a guy that's been in Blade.
Mm-hmm. And whatever. Aerosmith videos.
And Aerosmith videos. But he's all about artistic integrity. He wants the art to be forward. And he's embarrassed by these people that are in this garbage. I find this fascinating because everybody has their own opinion. That's fine. You know, Scorsese got in trouble fairly recently for calling it not cinema. Anybody really that speaks out against the MCU or DCEU, as we've seen, with any heft in the industry, are excoriated most of the time. Specifically the MCU, because, you know, the MCU has been much more successful than DC. And so, while I think, I always appreciate, like, that Sharon Stone interview that came out about Meryl Streep, where she's like, mm-hmm. Meryl, Meryl, Meryl. Mm-hmm. Everybody's talking about Meryl. There's all kinds of good, we talked about it before. There's all kinds of great actresses. I like my celebs to be candid. Go on the record. Take a swing. But this particular one was such a miss that it's baffling to me
mm-hmm.
that, A, he thinks this. I think that's a little weird. It's not garbage. There's some good stuff in there. But, B, that he would just keep on and on and on about it. And, C, this is Stephen fucking Dorff. This is not Matt Damon. Mm. This is not Keanu Reeves. This is not George Clooney or Meryl Streep. It's fucking Stephen Dorff. And I find it fascinating and kind of abhorrent at the same time.
Like, I think there was something about a lot of these 90s near heartthrob guys
And somehow Ethan Hawke escaped that.
Sure
with a,
did.
With a soul.
Sure did.
But there was something about 90s heartthrob actors. They all just got up their own ass.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to... Like Stephen Dorff is... He's not going to hear this, and if he wants to challenge me to a fight, so be it. But I don't want to name a bunch of other actors who are up their own ass and just make this a name-calling fest.
Mm.
But this feels very much like what a lot of 90s indie actors who never got an Oscar... Like, you know what? Serenity Now. I just feel like he has such a high opinion of himself to be able to speak like this. And maybe people hear me talk and hear me dismiss something and see the same thing in me. I certainly hope not. To believe yourself above all of this.
That's my deal, is the hubris, right? Is like, it's not only that he's disparaging this.
It's that I'm looking
saying,
down on it.
I do this
I
better.
Alone can see this. And Scarlett Johansson?
Yeah.
Her resume is fucking stacked,
yeah.
dude, with great performances, yeah. with great directors.
Yeah, that's right.
Why are you implicating? It's just, it's really tone deaf. It just shows, I think, how far removed he is from current Hollywood,
mm-hmm.
probably because he's busy going to Alabama every 6 months to shoot some low-budget thriller with an adjective title, and he plays a... He plays a demon caster. Just whatever it is he's doing is shit. Look at his fucking IMDb. That's why I tweeted what I did the other day. The fucking nerve of this guy.
Adjective title.
Blow dry.
Blow dry.
Heat stroke.
Yeah.
Actually, there are a lot of that.
There are. I looked at it yesterday.
The motel life.
I get the sense that this is just inevitable as you talk to more and more actors. Like, how many actors, directors, everybody in the world is doing some sort of press for some sort of small movie
mm-hmm.
and whatever, and one out of 100,000 of those ends up touching a nerve of some sort on some actor out of the fucking blue, and they have opinions, and then they just go off on this thing that's like, just doesn't, this is not your place really to be talking about this type of stuff. I mean, it's no more surprising to me that it's Stephen Dorff that it would be any other actor out
yeah.
there, you know? I mean, it just, I feel like it's a non-issue. Let him go about his... I mean, who cares?
That's why I found it so fascinating that it was this guy who arguably had... You know, I mean, he was in a most recent one that I remember him being in, besides Somewhere, was Public Enemies, the Bale Depp thing. Mm. And that... Talk about heartthrobs, man. Christian Bale, Johnny Depp, and Stephen Dorff.
He's barely in that movie.
I know. But no, I just thought it was a weird convergence of stories.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that he went so far off. Now, it could have been any number of factors. He could have run through the gamut of press, and this was the last one at 5:30 on a Friday or something like that. And everybody's asked him the same thing. And he finally just went off just because he was going to go mm-hmm. off. But also, he just kept at it. And the fact that he was saying no. What you were saying, no, I'm above this because I've got bigger plans and higher, loftier ambitions.
Just from a human standpoint, if you don't like something like that, just say it's not my cup of tea
yeah.
and move on.
Yeah, yeah.
You don't have to say, I think you're exactly right. That he could have simply said, those movies aren't my thing. But he went beyond that to say, I'm actually embarrassed
right.
for people who are in them. like, your embarrassment is some kind of like currency. You fucking
yeah, somebody's exactly. somebody's gonna be fretting over like, oh god, Stephen Dorff is embarrassed.
Like,
about
fuck, we were doing fine until Stephen Dorff didn't give us his blessing.
There's gonna be like 0.1% of the box office that's shaved off of Black Widow because of the Stephen Dorff contention.
Yeah, It's like Disney sees their like the returns coming in for Black Widow, and they're like, well, we would have made $350,000 more if it wasn't for the Stephen Dorff factor.
The interesting thing to me, though, is because I feel like this is not the first time this kind of thing has happened. I think that podcasts have a way of lowering people's guard, and they're new enough that a Stephen Dorff doesn't go into a podcast thinking it's a print interview. He doesn't go into it thinking this is the Tonight Show. I've got to watch what I'm saying. After 5 minutes of conversation, he's just being himself. You guys have talked to enough directors.
Oh, for sure.
And told me after what a cool person that guy is. And he told us this story about this. And we've interviewed a few people who have told us stories they begged us not to put on the air. Yeah. and so you just start to realize how some of these people kind of get trapped almost. Like you said, maybe it was the end of the day.
Yeah.
But this is not the first time somebody has guested on a podcast, somebody famous, and said something that got turned into a viral. Oh my God, this person said this about this. Can you believe it? And I think as we go forward, that'll wane and people will start to see podcast interviews as more of a professional. I got to watch what I say. I got to be really careful.
Like I said, I want people to be candid. I want to hear stories like that.
Yeah.
It's just the level that he went into. We've already talked about this too much. I'm sorry. But it was just the amount of arrogance and disparagement was so fascinating.
Or the idea that after 21 films and $70 billion of earnings, like bad video game movies are somehow bad.
Mm-hmm.
Like those, like the MCU is not, it's nothing. You don't want to be part of that. You don't want to be part of that success machine.
Nope.
No.
Nope.
Just like anything in this world that everybody does entertainment wise or whatever, everything's got a niche. Everything's got a thing, an audience that you can find. That's the reason why those movies are made. Yeah. And it just so happens those movies appeal to lots of people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are YouTube channels like us that appeal to a wide swath of people, but not like as much as it appeals to like people who like PewDiePie or something like that.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, so everybody's got their audience. This is how they attract that audience, and they continue to go for that audience. It's, to go out against it as much as you are, it's almost like you're trying to bring it down by yourself.
That could be. Yeah, I mean, that could be part of his thing. Like, I'm going to try to use this pull quote to boost my visibility. And he did, arguably.
Yeah.
And it sounds very ironic because it sounds like I'm disparaging Stephen Dorff by telling this story. But I found it more fascinating than, like, you know, boy, this guy's a dick.
Yeah.
Well, he had not said anything, and we just brought him up. I mean, he's not a bad actor.
No. No, like I said, he's good in Blade. He gets his ass kicked by Alicia Silverstone.
It's not like not like Rodney Dangerfield is out here going, I don't like those MCs. Well, that's my Rodney Dangerfield.
Yeah.
That is great. That is super.
I tell you, I was watching that Iron Man.
I give it no respect. No respect.
We just alienated like half of our audience.
Yes.
Who the fuck is Rodney Dangerfield?
Yeah, all of those Rodney Dangerfield fans that listen to us.
People are out there Googling, who the fuck is Rodney?
Yeah. All right. Do we have any recommends and warns?
Totes amazeballs.
They're great.
It won the Academy Award.
Oh, for what?
For best movie ever made.
Ooh, I gotta recommend. It's not a movie. I'm gonna jump in. I'm gonna recommend a subreddit. It's called Praise the Cameraman. Now, Reddit is a website that calls itself the front page of the internet. It's a good place to go. And then browse subreddits by topic. Everything from, I mean, everything. There's a Nashville subreddit I go to every day. There's a CinemaSins subreddit I go to every day. There's a teenager subreddit, which is kind of hysterical to read because it's a bunch of 14-year-olds asking how to talk to girls.
That's hilarious.
Atheism subreddit. There's any subreddit you could think of, it exists. A subculture community within Reddit. I've talked about a few subreddits before that are fun. I think I talked about Today I Learned in one of the first episodes of the podcast ever, TIL.
Yeah.
This one's called Praise the Cameraman, and it's just basically full of video and sometimes still shots where you can't fathom how the cameraman was able to keep everything in the shot.
Hmm.
So not just gorgeous photography, so that the first one I watched was an eagle flying in the air, and the camera's focused on this eagle close up for like 30 seconds of flight,
And then, boom, the eagle grabs another bird that just came into the frame and takes off out of frame with his prey. I couldn't catch a still shot of that shit if I had a telephoto lens. But this cameraman, it's like the golf cameraman who can catch the ball. Right?
Yeah, that's insane.
The second one I watched was a guy skydiving. Three guys skydiving. Two of them collide and bonk heads, and one of them is passed out. The third guy has a fucking helmet cam on. And Mission Impossible swims through the air to the unconscious guy and hug grabs him and pulls his own chute and saves his fucking life.
Wow.
And it's all caught on camera.
So this is not movie photography necessarily.
No.
It's just, it's
there are some examples of that, but those seem to get pushed out.
Okay.
The subreddit mods, I couldn't remember their title, seem very focused here. Like, I saw one that was a very cool photograph that used shadow to make it look like we were looking at two different dimensions, but it was one hallway, and they deleted it because this doesn't meet our standards. This is just a still shot of a cool looking thing, and there needs to be some miraculous work behind the camera for this to have been captured before it meets the credentials of this subject. I think you would highly enjoy it. I spent a good 2 hours.
This is so up my alley. I'm all over it. So the subreddit is praise the cameraman.
Yeah.
Obviously, for us who are woke social justice
camera
warriors,
person.
Camera person should be used.
Yes.
But that's the subreddit name.
Mm-hmm. Yes. This subreddit is not very woke, apparently.
What? Reddit?
Yeah.
Praise the cam. Reddit.com/r/ Praise the cameraman.
That might be a thing that I look at later today.
Absolutely. Yeah. I follow an account called Next Fucking Level.
Yes! They have a subreddit for that.
Yeah, and it's just the most amazing, and it is appropriately named because, like, there'll be a shot of a dude doing a flip in parkour or something like that, and you'll be like, ah, it's pretty good, but the next fucking level is that he's on the side of a cliff or something like that.
There's also,
like,
Nature
Christ.
Is Fucking Lit is one of my favorite subreddits too.
It's I can get lost in that shit.
I'm telling you,
get absolutely.
That's why
lost.
I'm not even sharing a movie. Recommending a subreddit.
Do it. Yeah. You can spend 2 hours like you would
there
in
you
a
go.
Movie.
That's
on
movie
this.
Length.
Mm-hmm. I'm gonna recommend a documentary that you can find on Hulu. I also think that you can see this in theaters. There's probably a couple other places that you can see this. It's called Summer of Soul. Or When the Revolution Could Not Be Televised.
I cannot
it's about
wait to see this.
Black Woodstock, basically.
Yeah.
And it's not Harlem Music Festival. It's Harlem something festival. I can't remember what it is. Anyway, there was every weekend there were acts coming from different genres of music, like gospel and R&B and things like that. Coming to this place in Harlem, in Harlem Park, and
Harlem Cultural Festival.
Cultural Festival, that's what it is. Musical acts include Stevie Wonder, Nina Simone, A Sly and the Family Stone.
Oh, which was, what is this, 69?
69.
Yeah, so this
Same
is
summer.
In his fucking heyday.
Dude, they lean into Sly and the Family Stone in
yeah,
this.
Yeah, dude.
In this, and he's such a great performer. It goes through the political realities going on in 1969. What a weird decade that was! All these different things that were converging into this festival. Now, the story behind the movie is they shot all this footage, and it stayed in somebody's basement for 50 years. They couldn't sell it. They couldn't sell it. Could not find a buyer for this festival. You watch this in fascination at seeing 19-year-old Stevie Wonder and Jesus. In their prime Sly and the Family Stone and Nina Simone who rounds this show out can't tear your eyes away from Nina Simone. You can't tear your eyes. And so you sit there and listen, but you also I'm like, how many things have been shot and are in some basement right now that have worlds of information and entertainment involved. There's it just in somebody's basement. Like how I mean, and this film was very well preserved. I mean it's nice. I mean it's very clean image that they have on this thing.
Can you imagine? So Questlove, Amir Thompson, directed this,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
Can you imagine his eyes when he first saw this?
Oh, yeah.
Because, I mean, he's a music connoisseur and a genius. Wrote several books, obviously an amazing musician. But he probably, when he saw this, his jaw probably was on the floor.
Yeah, and there's scenes where he's showing this footage to the people who are still alive today.
Oh, yeah.
And people who were there and everything like that. But they're just like, they're just as stunned as you are seeing this footage.
This reminds me of that Apollo documentary where all that footage was just sitting in the basement at NASA. Somebody stumbled across it, and it's like pristine. Hell, some woman in England just found one of the 200 copies of the Declaration of Independence in her attic. Like,
I didn't hear that. That's crazy.
I mean, this kind of shit makes me want to go digging around in the basement in the attic.
Do some national treasure.
I don't have a basement.
We're going to steal the Declaration of Independence.
Yeah.
One of the copies. Well, it's not the original. They made like 200 copies back in the day.
By hand, right?
Yeah. Well, I think. They didn't have copy machines.
Yeah.
Did they?
I don't think Ben Franklin had it.
Chris, what
them.
Year was Xerox born? I'm just kidding.
I cannot wait to
this
see
sounds
this.
Fascinating.
This is also so right up my alley. Gladys Knight and the Pips are in this.
Yep, get
apparently.
To see that too. The Herd's doing a Heard It Through the Grapevine. And,
Even Stevie Wonder. You think of 19-year-old Stevie Wonder, you're like, that's before Songs of the Keys of Life. And it's probably, Stevie Wonder's been fucking killing it since he was, I think, 9 years old.
Yeah.
Somewhere around there. It was little
Stevie
Wonder.
They showed, like, some pieces of, like, he had done this, and they showed, it had to have been 7, 8, 9 years old, Stevie mm-hmm. Wonder, pictures of him doing recordings and stuff like that, while his performance on the stage is going on.
Nice.
And it's like, yeah, I don't think I realized that he had been doing it that long.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. And he's still... as good as he was back in 1975, I think.
Mm-hmm.
His voice is still as good, I think.
Mm-hmm. He and it's funny too, where I think he's at a sort of a moment in his life where he's either going to be famous or he's just going to tail off and whatever. And he says something like, I never wanted to be driven by fear. I always wanted to do the things I wanted to do and everything. And him being Stevie Wonder, he's like, and I was going to do it. I didn't give a 4-letter word.
Love that guy. What a fucking national treasure. That's going to go. He's going to go down.
Speaking of Hulu, I was reminded by Dicer after last week's episode that Parasite, the movie I was bemoaning I couldn't find on any of the movie channels, is on Hulu.
Mm.
So any listeners out there last week were like, I want to see Parasite 2, you can go to Hulu.
I will tell you also that I had a rant a couple months ago about how it's just so hard to find where something is streaming.
Yeah.
And two apps were recommended to me, and they've worked very well.
Hmm.
One is called Just Watch. Another is called Real Good. I use the Real Good app more often than I use the Just Watch, but Real Good, I can type any movie, whatever, and it knows what you have, what your streaming services are after you enter them in.
Oh, nice!
And it says, none of the streaming services that you have this movie, or yeah, you can watch this on Apple TV or whatever, and it's been great.
I was also reminded after that episode that we did an ad for a service that does this. Like,
likewise,
yeah, like 3 years ago.
Yeah, I just don't. I at the time we were doing Likewise, though, I thought that was more about stuff we
suggesting.
We liked that we were suggesting to other people.
I think that was an element of it.
Yeah, for sure. But it does other things. Like
it does other
wizard.
Things.
I'm gonna make mine real short because this is a movie we've talked about before. I've gone back and watched it for the first time in probably 15 years. Boogie Nights.
Mm-hmm. Boogie Nights.
I forget how brilliant this fucking movie
mm-hmm.
is. You know, this is still at the beginning of Paul Thomas Anderson's career.
Second movie.
Second
movie after Heart Eight.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And before his magnum opuses, There Will Be Blood and The Master and even Punch Drunk Love, you could say. But you see everything. You see everything that he can do in this movie. I remember the long shot of the of the party going mm-hmm. through and you know all the
those
introductions and everything like that,
like expert level.
But that's one of maybe six
yeah.
shots that are almost that length. Like we praise, rightfully so, Children of Men for Alfonso Cuarón having those three instances of one shots that really center the movie. But Boogie Nights has what seems like a million of them. It's like the whole thing is
like
just kind of uncut.
Every time they're at Burt Reynolds' house for any kind of a gathering, there's a walk through the house one shot. Maybe exaggerating
even,
the number
no, no,
of
no.
times.
Even at the very end where he goes in yeah. and he meets Dirk and then he comes back over. Actually, he doesn't meet Dirk. He checks in with the camera crew and then he goes back around and then he checks in with Julianne Moore and then he finally gets to Mark Wahlberg. This movie, and I'm glad you mentioned Burt Reynolds because he's the best part of the movie. He's besides the direction and the camera work, Burt Reynolds is absolutely the heart and soul of that movie. He is as understated as I think I've ever seen him. The only time he loses his temper is when Dirk tries to take over like mm-hmm. the production and is like, I'm ready to fuck. I'm going to go right now. And my dick's hard. I'm ready to fuck. And he's like, no. And he's still trying to calm the situation down. And then he just loses it. And he's like, fuck you, man. I quit. You're fired. And then, God damn. We have talked at length about Mark Wahlberg's acting. And I still cannot figure it out, even after all this time. But the time where he comes after the whole incident in Alfred Molina's house and everything, and he comes back and he's emaciated, especially for Mark Wahlberg, and he doesn't even say, he's just like, you know, he doesn't even say I'm sorry by saying I'm sorry. He just kind of stammers over his words, and you don't know what Burt Reynolds' character is going to do, and then he just walks over and hugs him mm-hmm. and then he just devolves into this thing. That scene has every bit as much weight for, especially for a porno movie, that something like Good Will Hunting, the end of that has. It's a father figure forgiving his son. Then you got that scene where Mark Wahlberg is arguing with his mom, and he's like, why are you doing this? Why are you acting like this to me? And he's not being antagonistic to her. He's just like, stop it. I don't rip my posters off the wall. God damn, this movie's
yeah.
Go back and watch this movie. If you're like me, and what,
97.
You know I'm a Paul Thomas Anderson super fan, and I love The Master probably most. There Will Be Blood then, Punch Drunk Love, but I forgot how excellent Boogie Nights is, and it may have shot back to the top.
Has anybody been in more P.T. Anderson movies than Seymour Hoffman?
Luis Guzman?
I don't know.
He's in Punch Drunk Love.
Seymour Hoffman is in Boogie Nights, Magnolia, Punch Drunk Love, and The Master.
And he's in Hard Eight.
And Hard Eight.
He plays a real like asshole craps player.
So it's got to be him then, right? Maybe John C. Reilly. He's in
Philip Baker
Eight.
Hall's in a lot.
Both he and John C. Reilly are in the first three.
Yeah. He sort of started getting away from his usual cast once he started making the big elevated movies. But I think Philip Seymour Hoffman's probably right.
And then Phantom Thread didn't really have any of his regulars, right?
No.
Just Daniel Day-Lewis, who was only a regular because of There Will Be Blood.
Yeah. That guy, I'm going to watch anything he puts out. And Boogie Nights just absolutely flabbergasted.
Nothing will ever top the scene when Amy Adams jerks off Seymour Hoffman into
the
sink.
That's true. That's true.
He's like, ah!
And she's like, come for me. No more hooch.
All right, everybody, it's time to talk about BetterHelp.
BetterHelp!
Listen, guys, it's summer. I don't know if you noticed. A lot of people are hot in the U.S. A lot of people. You know what happens when people get hot? When I used to live in Chicago, when the heat would go up, crime, anger, confrontations, stuff like that, man. People just get kind of anxious and when it gets too hot out, right? If you're feeling, not maybe because of the weather, but just because of multiple issues in your life that you've got, you know, excessive worry, excessive sadness, excessive issues with your partner or friends or family, that kind of thing, substance issues, go to BetterHelp, man. BetterHelp is online professional counseling that you can do from your own home. So right now I'm looking at a computer, And if I were so inclined, I could schedule a session right here in the middle of the podcast and do it right here mm-hmm. while Jeremy and Chris listen. Mm-hmm. And I would be fine with that. I don't think they would be fine with that, but I would be fine with that. All from the comfort of your own computer, tablet, phone. It's online professional counseling. You can set up your appointments on there in your counseling room. You can communicate with your counselor. You can set up video chats or text chats. It is fantastic. BetterHelp has really done a lot for us, for me, and for a lot of our listeners.
I want to talk for a second to people who have done therapy.
Mm-hmm.
Please talk about it.
Oh, yeah.
To your friends, to your family, on your podcast. There is nothing shameful about it.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't have to get into the private issues of your therapy to simply mention to people you know that therapy has helped you. I had a friend tell me this week that their 16-year-old kid asked if they could do therapy because they have questions about their identity and they want to explore it.
Oh, my God. That's
awesome.
And
I said to this friend, the fact that you have raised this child to know that it's okay to do therapy and it's okay to ask you about it at 16
mm-hmm.
tells me you have done a phenomenal job as a parent.
Yep.
But that's what comes from destigmatizing therapy and talking about it like we do. We get messages regularly from fans who say, I was skeptical, I didn't do it for months, I finally pulled the trigger and I feel a little better. And talk about it. Tell people about it. Spread the word. And tell people how easy BetterHelp is. It is the least scary way to do therapy if it's your first time.
That's a really good point, actually. I went through a lot of issues to try to get into therapy. And I just, you know, whether it was the time, effort, scheduling, insurance, all that stuff is intimidating. Going to the office, yep. meeting a new person, starting fresh.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of that stuff is mitigated with BetterHelp. All you do is log in to BetterHelp.com. Go to BetterHelp.com/SinCast and log in. Just answer a few questions. And then you get matched with a counselor that meets your needs that you've stated within 24 hours. If you don't vibe with that counselor, if you feel like it's not working after a period of time, you can switch counselors at any time. No judgment, no cost, no anything like that. It's fantastic. Go to betterhelp.com/sincast. Least scary way to start counseling, as Jeremy said. I totally agree. betterhelp.com/sincast.
All right, let's just do the questions.
All right, we've got a bunch of them.
Question.
I got something to say.
I want the truth.
I am listening.
Now here's a question. Mm-hmm. Interesting mm-hmm. way to lead off.
Mm-hmm.
I was watching The League of Extraordinary Gentlemen mm-hmm. last night for the first time. It was leaving Amazon Prime, and I figured, why not? Understandable.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
I enjoyed it, but couldn't stop thinking this would have made a really good anime. I know there are tons of adaptations that would have been better suited as a miniseries, but outside of those, what stories do you think would have been better told if they weren't a movie, but a different medium instead? Gotta say, love you for writing in. Love you for enjoying League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, but mm-hmm. man. That movie's balls.
I can't get there on that movie.
I had always said, even though I enjoy the movie Barbershop, that it would have been a better TV series. Then they did actually make it in a TV series in 2005 that only lasted 10 episodes.
Was Cube in that?
He produced it.
Okay, he wasn't the guy. Okay.
No. The reasoning for me that Barbershop would make a better TV series is especially the conversations they have in the barbershop and the Cedric the Entertainer stuff where, you know, he goes off the deep end a couple times. But like in a TV show, you have the ability to keep that current year after year after year, more different kinds of discussions and political talk and things of that nature. And just the movie Barbershop in and of itself is very episodic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there is a main story arc going on in that movie. But for the most part, your enjoyment of Barbershop is them in the shop talking.
Absolutely.
And I think that works better as a TV series. I love the movie. I just think it works better as a TV series. And that way you can just, like, every year you've got new things to put in there. They did this reality thing a couple years ago, The Shop, with LeBron James.
I was going to ask you about that. Did you ever watch it?
I never watched it. I saw snippets of it.
It was good. He had good people. He had thoughtful people. I think he had Obama on there one time.
He may have, yeah.
And it was interesting. You know, Kevin Hart and Lil Nas X were on at the same time. Mm-hmm. And that was interesting because Nas had just come out.
Kevin Hart hates gay people. I'm being sarcastic.
Right. No. It's interesting because they got into that. He was like, you know, but they had a civil conversation about it, which is the function of a barbershop, right? Mm-hmm. But you're right that they could tackle issues like that in a scripted way that I think would land better. Mm-hmm. And you're absolutely right.
I never saw that 10 episode series. It has a 5.9 on the IMDb, but it's got one of those weird things where, like, it's a 5.9 for the series, but then you look at individual episodes and it's like 9. How in the world does that happen? But yeah, another one that I thought of, and this might be just completely random shit that went through my head, but Primer might have been better as a book.
Oh, interesting. Wow. Interesting.
Wow.
Primer has its, you know, huge cult following at this point. In fact, I'm pretty sure it's so huge that when I first watched Primer, it had a 5.9, 6.0 on the IMDb.
Really?
And now it's at a 6.9.
Hmm. Oh, nice.
The movie is fine. I wouldn't go back and change history or anything. It's just that a book would be much better for me, because then I would be able to read over how all this works a lot better, and I wouldn't have to be, you know, wouldn't have to feel, held hostage by the movie having to move forward,
yeah,
essentially.
Yeah.
Whereas in a book, I can sit there and go, okay, I think I get this and everything. And I think it would be a better story and better presented through as a book. So maybe, yeah, random.
This is a very weird leap between movies, but it's almost like Ready Player One, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where the book was able to marinate in the idiosyncrasies in the minutia of word just kind of just doesn't get there. But yeah, it dwells on the minutia and the nerd stuff to where, like, you understand what this guy's motivation and stuff like that. With the movie, it had to move forward. It had to be an action movie. It had to be exciting.
Mm-hmm.
And it lost all of its luster for me. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, no, I have not seen Primer yet, but seeing what I've seen, and I've read the crazy Wikipedia entry,
mm-hmm,
I think I would enjoy that too, yeah.
Yeah.
If you could go back and remind yourself, oh, this is how that works.
Mm-hmm.
I'm an 80s and 90s kid.
Really?
I watched a lot of cartoons growing up. Y'all ever remember that Mr. T cartoon?
I do.
Mr. T. Ba-da-da-dum, ba-da-bum, ba-da-dum, ba-da-dum,
so he remembers it quite well, apparently.
Ba-da-dum, I don't know the whole thing.
Mask was another one. G.I. Joe.
Mask, the Eric Stoltz one?
No, Mask, the G.I. Joe knockoff, where they had different vehicles.
M-A-S-K?
Yes, but with periods.
Yes. I do remember that.
So this is going to sound very weird coming out of my mouth, but I would love to see the Fast and Furious movies as a late 80s, early 90s action cartoon.
Mm.
I honestly think it is much better suited for G.I. Joe cartoon action than for live action.
Mm.
You don't have to lose any of the family.
Mm-hmm.
You probably have to lose the Corona. Alcohol doesn't work so well on Saturday mornings.
Yep. It's lemonade.
Yeah.
But every episode, there's a sudden new Toretto brother that works well in a cartoon.
Mm-hmm.
Action where people are just car drivers, but they never die because they're Superman. That works really well. These movies are cartoons anyway, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just would work perfectly. I think that's the best way for me to like Fast and Furious franchise, is if you turned it into a 90s cartoon. And then I think I would actually legitimately love it. But not now.
Okay, so before you get comments on Twitter and all that stuff, it's not 90s, obviously, but there is an animated series for Fast and Furious called Spy Racers on Netflix. My son watches it, and it's about Dom Toretto's little nephew, brother, Tony Toretto. And my kid adores it.
Nice job telling me that before I did my whole thing.
I didn't want to interrupt you, but what you're saying, though, is a Mr. T style animation.
Yeah.
And this is obviously CG and like new stuff and everything.
No, I want that old hand drawn.
Yeah.
But the plot of the Fast and Furious movies feels like those old.
I agree.
Mr. T or G.I. Joe. Or
episodic.
Musk.
Yeah.
Impossible. So the world's going to blow up every week and we save the day with the submarine that goes to space. I mean, it just works better as a cartoon than it does as a live action. I didn't know there was an actual cartoon, but that's not what I'm asking for.
No, I understand. But if you are interested, it's pretty good.
No, I'm not interested.
All right, fine. Be a dick.
Does it look like Mr. T cartoon?
No, it doesn't.
Then I'm not interested.
Do you have another
one? Oh, no, I only had the one, which was lame. So
let me ask you a question, because I think it's you that doesn't like this movie very much.
Mm-hmm.
Or what are your thoughts on Hateful Eight?
I like it.
You like it. You don't, right?
Not a big fan.
What do you not like about it?
I feel like it is... I'm going to talk out of my ass, because I've only seen it 1.5 times. I feel like it's just the most indulgent Tarantino gets, where he said before he even wrote that film, I'm so good at dialogue.
Talky. It's talky.
I'm going to prove it.
I see.
I don't mind the fact that it's talky.
Yeah.
And he is good at dialogue.
Right.
And the performances are good in it.
Right.
It just, the movie feels like a humble brag to me.
I got you. So I always thought it would be better as a play.
Ooh.
A stage production. It's very closely associated with Agatha Christie-ish type of, and then there were none type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I think you could do everything that's in the movie on a stage. I think you could have the stagecoach go through. Obviously, it wouldn't be cinematic, but probably 70% of that movie is in the cabin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the performances... The dialogue, I think, would snap on stage. I think you could edit it a little bit more, too. Now, having said this, Tarantino himself is saying that he's going to write a play version of this. And I would watch the shit out of that. I think that would be really, really interesting. I think the characters are interesting. I think the mystery is interesting.
Are you going to read that Once Upon a Time in Hollywood book?
No. But I really, for some reason, after all this press came out, I became very interested in seeing that movie for like a fifth time for some reason. Like,
apparently
I want to watch
it
again.
Book,
maybe it'll hit me.
Is not identical to the movie. In addition to including extra scenes, it doesn't play out exactly the same way. I'm sure the broad strokes do, but the book also reveals whether or not Cliff Booth shot his wife.
Oh, I don't want to know that.
I don't either.
I think I already know that, but I don't want to know that.
Exactly. Like, it'd be like him writing a novelization of Pulp Fiction and revealing what's in the briefcase.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, fuck that, man.
Why is that, right? Like, the answer is not going to be satisfying. Is always the reason why we don't want to know that stuff. Like, when finally we know who You're So Vain is written about, we're going to be like, oh, yeah, that was one of the people that we speculated.
Could it be some banker that she met and had sex with
one
day?
It was Dave Coulier, right?
Yeah, it was Dave Coulier. Mm. Yeah. And because Dave Coulier, he ran through some ass in the 70s.
What's crazy is he was probably like 16 when this song came out.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I think Hateful Eight in particular, of all of Tarantino's stuff, now Reservoir Dogs would make a great play.
Mm-hmm.
I think. Mm-hmm. That is
most of it's in the warehouse.
Exactly. And I think, Pulp Fiction, I don't think would have worked as a play. Django would not work as a play. I don't think Django works anyway. But I think Hateful Eight is perfect for that. And I almost would rather have said he diverted his career and went into, I'm going to do a stage production of this. Because if you remember, there was all that drama around the script itself. It was leaked, mm-hmm. and then he didn't want to make it, and then he made it anyway, and then all that stuff.
Which was some bullshit, by the way.
They did a table read, didn't they, before they actually did the film?
Yeah.
To me, it's like, who gives a shit if it gets leaked and like 1,000 people know that what the ending is? It's not like the million people who go out and watch the movie are going to know what the ending is.
He's still threatening to finish after his next movie, and honestly, I'm here for it.
Yeah, I'm fine.
I enjoy his movies more than other directors, but the man has worn me out.
where did you fall on Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, by the way?
Because it's actually, I did not like it pretty adamantly for 3 or 4 viewings. It has grown on me a bunch.
That's why I want to give it another shot.
I don't I'm on an island. I get it. I don't like some of the things he does just because he's paying homage to things. Russell comes in narrating in the last 20 minutes of this movie, it is so jarring to me.
It is.
And the only answer I can think of is the movies he's paying homage to sometimes had sudden narrators at the end to wrap things up. That doesn't make Once Upon a Time in Hollywood better for me.
Yeah.
It makes it better for him.
Yeah.
And so there are still choices like that. I used to only like the scene at the ranch. And now I really like several other scenes, especially the stuff with DiCaprio and Timothy Oliphant and the little girl.
Oh, for sure. That's the crux
on the
of
set
the movie.
Of all the stuff he's shooting. That stuff has grown on me a ton.
Mm-hmm.
Brad Pitt's character has grown on me a ton too, but I still don't love it.
Have you watched that several times,
Chris? I haven't. I actually really loved it when I first watched it, even after sending it, it was the same way. But there are things about it that I'm like, come on, like just the whole fact that the Manson group decides. You know, well, we couldn't get into the one house, so let's go back and kill him. And it's like, no, I understand you're doing a revisionist history thing, and that's fun. This is the world as it would have been had Leonardo DiCaprio, can't remember his
Rick Dalton
character, had existed back then. It would have changed all of this stuff. I get it. The fact that they go all the way back down that hill and they're like, you know, and then it's all like, we just gotta go back and you gotta kill people, man. Like, it's society and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, I know that's the way she was, but I'm just like, fuck this, man.
He threatened us with a margarita.
Yeah. And they go back and try to do all that. Now, that whole thing at the end is over the top comic violence.
Yep.
I could do without that. I could do without all of that.
Whereas Brad Pitt drives really fast has suddenly become genius to me the more I watch this movie.
I love his character. I absolutely adore his character.
But just the fact that he never doesn't do it.
He doesn't give a shit.
Every time he gets in the car, and it's shot really well too, but every time he gets in the car, you know he's going to go twice as fast as everybody
else.
That's
what annoyed me so much the first time I saw it is all the fucking driving. But it does make a point.
It does.
He's done so much more dangerous. He's done so many more dangerous than this. He doesn't care if he goes 120 miles on the interstate.
He doesn't. But also, his life these days is being a driver. He's not a stuntman anymore.
Right.
He's just Rick Dalton's go-getter. And so to get from point A to point B as quickly as possible makes absolute sense for that man.
Yeah, 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 yeah. But he won the Oscar for that.
He did.
Right?
Yeah. I remember watching that with a few people who were like, ah, put that about midway into his filmography, and now they're like, it's his best movie he's ever made.
I think it's gonna grow on me like almost like Blade Runner 2049, where I liked it, and I liked Once Upon a Time in Hollywood the first time I saw it, but I'm gonna appreciate it a little bit more. But you're right, there's gonna be some decision. Not read the book.
All right.
Next question.
Yeah.
What is the best year/2 year period you've seen one actor have in terms of successful movies? For example, an example that we've talked about before, Jim Carrey in 1994, same year, Ace Ventura, The Mask, and Dumb and Dumber, virtually an unknown before this, except for In Living Color. All being released within 11 months of each other. What do you guys think?
And this would have been my answer, as usual.
Question asker's always steal the best answer.
But I could also expand this, since if you're expanding it to 2 years, he also did Ace Ventura 2 and Batman Forever, and that was all in an 18-month period. He did 5 movies that were all hits. That's why when The Cable Guy came out in 1996, Ben Stiller was worried, I'm going to make the first movie that Jim Carrey doesn't make $100 million on.
But it's also his my favorite of that, that time.
Yeah. I came up of a period between 1996 and 1998, which is technically 3 years, but fuck you. Matt Damon did Courage Under Fire, The Rainmaker, Good Will Hunting, Saving Private Ryan, and Rounders.
I watched part of Saving Private Ryan yesterday.
Yeah.
I don't think Matt Damon gets enough love.
He doesn't.
For that scene where he finds out his brothers are dead, and then that scene where he tells the funny story that starts him crying.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's only in the movie for 5 minutes, and everybody else has showy stuff. He's great in that movie.
Yeah, that you remember all the stories about his experience on that movie, right?
Yeah.
Everybody was going through like actual boot camp or some
that's
shit.
That's the craziest.
And he was like doing press tour shit for Good Will Hunting and all this. And Spielberg specifically wanted to keep it that way.
Yep.
So that when they did finally reach him in the movie, they would actually have some real fucking feelings about finding him.
See, that's the shit that you don't hear Spielberg do. You hear him do stuff like the facial prosthetic on Indiana Jones, but you don't hear him doing character work like this anymore.
I don't think Spielberg's involved with that movie, by the way. I mean, he's Indiana producing, Jones? I'm sure, but it's... he's not directing that.
Who's directing it?
Logan.
James Mangold?
James Mangold's directing.
Logan.
You got there.
Yeah, I did. So you did Matt Damon.
Give me those movies again.
Courage Under Fire, The Rainmaker, Good Will Hunting, Saving Private Ryan, and Rounders.
I'm gonna counter because I'm gonna go next. And this is not even my pick, but because you said one movie, it reminded me. In a 2-year period, Edward Norton did American History X, Rounders, Fight Club. Then if you want to expand it a little bit, did Keeping the Faith, which is not a bad movie. I don't know why I pointed at you. And The Score. A good fucking run. Now, of course, before that, Primal Fear. And he's had a really good run.
One of the songs from Keeping the Faith was performed at my wedding. That may be why you pointed at me, even though you didn't know that.
Possibly so. I'm going to follow up with my actual answer.
Oh, he's double dipping.
Harry Ford. Back in 1981, or actually in 1980, Empire Strikes Back, arguably best Star Wars movie ever made. Mm-hmm. 1981, Indiana Jones and the Raiders of the Lost Ark. 1982, Blade Runner.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If you want to keep going, Temple of Doom, Witness, Mosquito Coast, Frantic, but we're not doing that.
Blow the question out of the water.
I know, but that is three iconic. Deckard, Indiana Jones, and Han fucking Solo in a 2.5-year span. Mm-hmm. That's pretty fucking amazing.
You know, I don't know what the years would be, but John Williams had a pretty good stretch in there, too.
Indiana
Jones and Star Wars and Superman.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to go with a man we've already mentioned today, Mr. Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Yeah.
Who from 1998 to 2000.
His whole career, man. Just say his whole career.
Who 1998 to 2000. No, because he's got stuff in there. Like that movie you love that I hate, where he can't shoot a basketball.
Yeah.
it's good. Big Lebowski.
It's a great movie.
Big Lebowski, Flawless, Magnolia, Talented Mr. Ripley, State and Maine, Almost Famous.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Have you seen Flawless?
I have. It's great.
I saw Flawless. I rented it from Blockbuster forever ago, and I remember really liking it, but it's before I knew who Philip Seymour Hoffman really was.
Shit.
What?
Who directed that? That's a
Schumacher.
Schumacher, that's right.
He directed Flawless?
Mm-hmm.
What a weird movie for
Schumacher's
him to
entire career.
Not
is a little
entirely
weird.
I mean, it's different from what he's done, I guess.
Yeah.
But him being a gay icon, it would make sense. I don't know if he's an icon, but he's a gay film director.
Yeah.
Makes sense that he would do a movie like this, like Flawless.
Yeah. I'm just thinking about tone of his other stuff.
Right. It's
yeah.
different from what he's done, yeah. for sure.
That's a good pick,
that's my
friend.
Guy. That's my guy right there.
That's my good
Actually,
pick.
Actually, I almost went with Nick Cannon, who has had 4 children born in the last 6 months.
Wow.
Let me wrap my head around
Wow.
That. Hold on. Four kids.
Yes.
Were any of them twins or anything?
Yes, one set of twins.
Okay.
And then two other children.
Obviously,
not the
three
same
different women or two
so.
Different
women? I believe he's got seven children total.
Okay.
Four born in the last 6 months. And I'm just saying...
Yo, he could field a little league team.
That dude's working. That dude does not take breaks.
And he doesn't wear condoms.
Apparently
he does not.
He doesn't ever pull out. What is your favorite movie ever? What is your favorite movie ever? What is your favorite movie near swear, where a character says a clean version of a swear word, but it's not an overdub, it's scripted? This is from Jeremy S. in Nashville, Tennessee.
Wow, there are other Jeremy S.'s in Nashville? Yeah.
That's weird.
I'm going to do one that someone thought we should have done with the F-bomb question a couple of times.
Oh.
Right. Which is A Christmas Story.
Nice.
Where Ralphie says fudge. Only I didn't say fudge. I said the mother of all swear words, the F dash 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 word. In the movie, he says fudge. It's scripted that way. I don't care if he really said fucking quote real life.
That'd be hilarious.
Yeah. That's one that's scripted. The other one, I'm kind of cheating since it's not a movie. But have you ever seen the Mr. Show sketch that is a Goodfellas parody called Pally's?
No.
Have you ever seen that? Did you ever watch Mr. Show that much?
No, not much.
Oh, my God. You guys both would love Mr.
I know.
Show.
I know. Every time I've watched it, it's been awesome.
So but. Much. So... like how Mr. Show used to do where it would go from one skit and seamlessly enter another skit. I guess Kids in the Hall used to do that type mm-hmm. of thing too. But it's this guy at a restaurant and he's like, something's happened to his suit. And there's like, well, we know somebody who can take care of this or whatever. And so like it goes seamlessly into this movie where these people are all digging out in the middle of the woods and they're like burying this suit or whatever. And he's like, yeah, we used to hang out with each other all the time. We were a bunch of pallies. And then Pallies comes up on the screen. And so we used to call this guy Johnny one time because he only said things once. And it was like, man, this really stinks. And the guy's like, what? And it's David Cross. And he just looks up at him and then comes back, start putting mud over the suit.
Oh my God.
So then it goes to a kitchen scene and it says very clearly edited for television on it and everything. And it's like, boy, this flimsy soup really tastes really good. And he's like, I don't give a guy. He's like, you're a mother father, you know, and all this stuff. And then like, there's a point where Bob Odenkirk flips the guy off and a big circle goes around it and it's a thumb. And they cut out all the violence. Like somebody's like, got like pointing a gun and then somebody's just like, all the swears are dubbed, but they were scripted that way because it's an edited for television.
Nice.
Takeoff on edited for television.
Mother, father.
Yeah. And there's like one where it's like mother, father, Chinese dentist.
I tell you what, the kids these days don't get the frivolity of the dubbed version on network TV.
Yeah.
I mean, Few Good Men had some classics, and I'm not even remembering now. Mm-hmm. Except I do remember Forget You, Harold!
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
When Jessup does, he says, I'm going to rip your fucking head off and piss in your dead skull. Yeah. You fucked with a wrong Marine. I don't know what they did with that. But it was unintelligible.
There's some all-timers, like Big Lebowski's got that one where it's like, what's it? What is it, John? Instead of fuck a stranger in the ass.
Oh, my God. This is why you don't.
Find a stranger in the Alps.
Yes. Something. Yes.
And then like RoboCop used to have some good ones, too, that I never saw the dubbed version of RoboCop, but a lot of those. Oh, there's one where there's the scene where Miguel Ferrer is talking to, what's his name, Ronnie Cox in the bathroom or whatever. No, it's Ronnie Cox talking to Miguel Ferrer. Ronnie Cox is like, we used to call my boss a bunch of things back in the day, and they used to, you know, I once even called him asshole, and that was like the big deal in RoboCop. So in the dub version, it's like, one time we even called him a lot worse.
And it's hilarious how they cannot get the ADR to come anywhere close to it.
Yeah,
it's like a female voice or something, like, yeah. A lot worse.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So for this answer, I have two that I really like. I love in Almost Famous when Zooey Deschanel says, "Fuck you!"
Yeah.
to her mom. because her mom is so strict and they're not supposed to cuss. But even that plays, I think, harder for Frances McDormand than if the kid had said, "Fuck you."
Yeah.
what does she respond? She's like, is it Patrick Fugit? It says, like, oh, she didn't say the bad word. She's like, same thing.
Yeah.
Same
well, thing. She said, he goes, well, she didn't actually say it. She didn't say the actual word. And she goes, what's the difference? And he goes, the you.
And then I've been watching a lot of The Italian Job lately because it's on one of the movie channels a lot. And I really like that movie. But Mark Wahlberg and the gang, they get some supplies from a man named Skinny Pete, who is a massive 7 foot, 400 pound. In real life, he's a former gang member turned musician. and then that funny scene where he tells Mos Def not to look him in the eye, and Mos Def is like, trying to look anywhere but the 400 pound guy in front of him. Mos Def nearly steals that movie. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so Skinny Pete he calls Mark Wahlberg later because the Ukrainians are after Mark Wahlberg because somebody killed a Ukrainian. I think it was Mark Wahlberg. It was actually Ed Norton. But
with a mustache.
Skinny Pete says, one thing I learned is never to mess with mother-in-laws, Mother Nature, or mother frickin' Ukrainians. And it's just the image of seeing this 400-pound hulking monster who has to censor his fucks. And I'm sure it's because the movie was PG-13, but he goes, mother frickin', it's not dubbed. He says it that way. And I just like the idea that this massive man doesn't actually swear. He near swears his whole life.
This is a very watchable movie, isn't it?
Insanely watchable.
The first one is better. The original is better.
The original is better as a film, yes. But I'm not sure it's as much fun.
I don't think so either.
This movie is just fun, man. The heist is clever. The story makes sense. The performances are just the right amount of cartoonish.
Yeah.
What holds it back the most is some really dated Napster references. And a cameo by Sean Fanning.
Okay, who?
The other Sean that invented Napster, the real one that invented it, but Sean Parker got all the credit.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Yeah, yeah.
So there's a story, because Seth Green's character is nicknamed Napster, and the story is told a couple different times that, you know, he invented Napster, but he fell asleep, and his roommate Sean Fanning stole it. And there's a flashback of Seth Green asleep on a desk, and Sean Fanning looking at his computer going, ooh, and he takes a disc out. I'm just like, dude, this was the peak of your life. Like, you invented Napster, you got sued to oblivion, you got to cameo in The Italian Job, and now you're probably a waiter. Like, I don't know what the fuck you're doing. But you didn't even get the Social Network treatment. Like, that all went to Sean Parker.
I got to watch that movie again. That's Charlize, Mark Wahlberg, Ed Norton, Donald Sutherland for a hot minute.
Seth Green.
I thought it was Giovanni Ribisi, but it's Seth Green. I get those two mixed up.
That's
sometimes.
Easy enough to do.
Mos Def, and that's the crew, right?
That's the crew. Yeah. And it's good, man. It's solid. I don't know which movie channel it's on.
Is Statham in that?
Who?
Statham? Jason Statham?
Oh, Jason Statham. Sorry, yeah.
That's right.
Handsome Rob.
Handsome Rob.
Yeah,
I like
because
that.
Because we did an outtake. I remember. I don't know Italian Job as well as you do. I've seen it only once, but we did an outtake on what movie was it? It might have been Fast and Furious or something like that, where you wrote one with Italian Job where Seth Green is pretending to be Statham, and is like, what is it like to be like this guy? You just come up and is, hey, I would like to go out on a date with you, you know, doing a real good Statham.
I'm afraid I'm gonna need your shirt.
Yeah, and so we put it we dubbed it over this scene in this other movie where he's talking to his girlfriend in that movie, and it's perfect.
It actually, Green does do a pretty good Statham.
Yeah.
All right, one that you guys know very well, the listeners, and one that you might not, the cussing in Fantastic Mr. Fox.
Man, I love that so much. Stuff.
That scene between Clooney and Bill Murray was like, don't cuss me. I'll cuss you whenever I want. Are you cussing? Are you cussing me? Are you cussing me? And then they get up and they're... Oh, my God. I believe every swear in there is a cuss, right? Like, they say cuss
in fact,
the
there's
swear.
Even a point where they go past this graffiti-laced wall and it just says cuss on it.
It's such a great way. I mean, this is still, like, up there with my favorite Wes Anderson films. And it's a level that he didn't get with Isle of Dogs, I don't think, of precociousness and stuff like that. But it's stuff like that. It's the cussing. Mm-hmm. You cussing me?
Yeah. No, that reminds me of the... I put another one down I didn't answer. That was the Good Place, that show with Kristen Bell. Mm-hmm.
I absolutely adore that.
Because yes. All the cussing in there is mother forking shirt balls. Yep. It's all like cute cussing.
What's funny is in the outtakes, every once in a while, Kristen Bell will actually be like, fucking shit! And she's like, ah! Forgot to do it. Because everybody on there has a terrible amount. Jamila and all
Ted Danson is on there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
There was I was going to maybe bring up Nicolas Cage and The Rock, but I couldn't think of real specific. I know there's a point where he's like, all right, stop with this, a-hole.
Yeah.
And he does stuff like that. And then there's the point where he's in the jail cell and he's like, so you got out of Alcatraz, but you didn't tell me how you got out of your cell. I figured like you, that would be important information in this situation. Maybe. It's like out in the, and then he's like, I want to know how in the name of Zeus's butthole you got out of your cell.
Yeah. He also, when he and Sean Connery are going through the bowels of the things, he's like, so why don't you cut me some frickin' slack?
Yeah.
My other one is one that we don't talk enough about, Johnny Dangerously.
Oh, Lord.
You want to watch an iconic Michael Keaton performance from really, really in his comic prime, 1984. He's playing a gangster, Johnny Dangerously, and he's got it down perfectly. And so at the beginning of the movie, he steals from one of the rival mobsters,
mm-hmm.
who's this Hungarian guy or something like that.
Motherfucking Hungarians.
Motherfucking Hungarians. And he's got this crazy axe. I can't even do it. But he's like, you farging bastich.
Yeah.
And he calls him, you're farging icehole. Yeah. It's so fucking great, man. Yeah. And it's... Joe Piscopo is fantastic in this. Everybody's playing way over the top. Mary Lou Henner and Danny DeVito, both of Taxi fame at that point, were great in this. This is an underrated gem.
Sure is.
And that has some of the most wonderful malapropriations that you'll ever hear for swearing.
It reminded me of Bad Boys 2 when they go into the convenience store and a guy sees their guns and so he pulls guns on them and he goes, freeze, mother bitch!
Yeah, yeah, Johnny Dangerously is one of those movies I don't think has a very high rating on the IMDb, but it's funny as fuck, man. The I believe Amy Heckerling's follow up to Fast Times at Ridgemont High, and there's you know the swearing. Is there even a point where the newspaper says "Farkin War"?
It's up there, honestly. I've seen this more than I've seen Top Secret. I love Top Secret, but it's up there at the same level of comedy and like jokes per minute.
Yeah, there's that point where like there's the. It's like there's an escape at 11, pass it on or whatever, and it gets and they play that game of telephone where it's changing. Finally gets to Johnny Dangerously and it's like something ridiculous, like a raccoon is going to show up by midnight or whatever, and Michael Keaton's like, so there's going to be an escape at 11, and he's like, wait, how do you get that from that? He's like, I don't know, I just know this telephone line.
I know this line. Exactly. Let's do one more, why don't we?
Yep.
I'm going to pick the best from the rest.
Oh, hey, this is fun. Let's move to TV. Let's have some TV stuff.
Okay.
What is your favorite episode of your favorite show? My favorite show is the 1959 version of The Twilight Zone. My favorite episode of it is Season 3's The Changing of the Guard. Not familiar enough with The Twilight Zone to know what that is, but I do remember Richard Donner just passed away yesterday as we record this, and I do remember that he directed that flight or shit. What is it called? William Shatner Terror at 10,000 feet.
Yeah, something whatever.
The one with William Shatner and the gargoyle out there and stuff like that.
Later redone with
Lithgow.
It's Lithgow.
It's Cusack.
I said Lithgow for the longest time. I said Lithgow for the longest time until I actually heard him.
Oh, heard him say it?
Yeah, where he's like, hi, I'm John Lithgow. And I was like, okay.
Well, Alicia Silverstone just said on Instagram 2 weeks ago, my name's not Alicia, it's Alicia.
Oh, I've always said Alicia.
I have too, but apparently people have been calling her Alicia.
That's weird.
It's Camila Cabello.
It's Camila Cabello. Cabello. Carvello. Carvello.
During the course of Music Video Sense, I think we've pronounced her name 10 different ways.
The weird one for me was The Last Dragon. It feels like it should be Raya and The Last Dragon, but the movie it says it's Raya.
Raya. Mm-hmm.
And yeah. I don't like that.
You don't like it?
No, you spell it just R-Y-A if it's Raya.
You don't like Awkwafina either.
Or R-R-A-I-A, where you're more apt to say Raya than Raya.
Did I tell you about how in one of my Abel's books, when I first introduced the love interest whose name is Emmeline,
mm-hmm.
I originally wanted her name to be Earline, but I couldn't figure out how to spell it.
Interesting.
I think Earline is a very pretty name. It rolls off the tongue. But the way that I ended up spelling it, my wife, who was my pre-reader, thought that I had named the love interest Earline.
Oh.
And she said, are we in the South now? And I said, well, now I have to change the name completely, even if I find another spelling.
Earline.
Earline.
Hey, Earline.
Earline, come with me to the picket paw.
Well, you sure can teleport.
Okay, I'm going to answer this question. For The Simpsons, I picked the episode called Radio Bart.
Ooh, good one.
Where Bart fools everyone into thinking he's trapped in a well. He has...
Timmy O'Toole.
He has, yeah, Timmy O'Toole. He's gotten this label maker thing where he has put his property of Bart Simpson on it. He gets it for his birthday from Homer. It's also the microphone that you can
remotely broadcast.
Take a radio station and speak into it and everything. And the commercial for that is hilarious in that movie. Like, you know, like, hey, baby, you want to come? I think that's the actual commercial. People driving by in the car and like, hey, baby, why don't you come and take a ride with us or whatever. They actually did that with the actual product that they're doing that. But then there's a guy in the office or whatever. He's points to a guy and goes, you're fired. and stuff like that. But he gets that for his birthday. He gets a label maker from Homer because he's awful. And he starts putting property of Bart Simpson on everything, and he even puts it on a little cassette recorder that he throws down into the well. And he starts saying, hey, I'm Timmy O'Toole, I'm trapped in this well, and he threw that thing down the well. So everybody thinks that there's this kid trapped in a well. Everybody tries to save him. It doesn't work. They have special guest stars like Sting on this one, which has that great when Bart has to go down in the well, actually go down in the well, because he knows that once they find out that there's no boy down there, they're going to find out there's a tape recorder mm-hmm. that says property of Bart Simpson on it. He goes down in the well and actually gets trapped down in the well. And when they finally do save him, there's a point where Sting's like, he's all muscle bound and everything. And he comes in, he's the first one into the well, and Bart's like, Sting! And then Homer pushes Sting out of the well. Mom, Dad! And there's a canary in a coal mine thing in there.
Nice.
It's just such an excellent episode. It's so funny all the way throughout.
We're sending our love down the well.
Do the old We Are the World parody.
Not well.
I got a couple more. Breaking Bad, the one called Gliding Over All, season 5, mid-season finale, where Hank finds out Walt is Heisenberg.
Ooh, nice.
Is that the garage scene?
No, that's
no,
the on the toilet.
The next episode.
Okay.
This episode is the one where they're having this party at the very end, and Hank goes on the toilet and he finds that Leaves of Grass.
Right, the Walt Whitman.
And then he sees the thing from Gale that says, you know, to my favorite WW.
Yeah.
And then he flashes back to season 1 where he's like, what does WW mean? Is it Walt Whitman? Walter White? And he's like, you got me.
Yeah.
And then Hank has this look on his face like,
oh, that's such a great... both of those, that and the subsequent episodes, have the most amazing final shots. Oh, my God.
Yeah. And in Game of Thrones, season 6 is The Winds of Winter, where Cersei destroys the fuck out of the Sept of Baelor.
My God, that episode is amazing.
It's so good. I remember we were doing the podcast at the time. that episode came out, and then we talked some Game of Thrones or whatever. And I said, it's amazing to watch a television episode where you think you're seeing history, like you're actually seeing real history involved. It's fictional as fuck, but it feels like history. That's how amazing that episode was.
Okay, so I was absent during this season of Game of Thrones. Is this where she takes the Blackwater, the green stuff?
Yeah.
And nukes like the whole rival.
She puts a whole ton of it in there. Yeah, and with what's her name?
Marjorie.
Yeah.
And then all of the religious people are there. The sparrow and all his flock.
And doesn't she like take a sip of wine afterwards or something?
Mm-hmm.
She's watching the explosion and she's quite pleased with herself.
And I think she ends. She also kills
the woman who tortured her.
Yeah. So what's her name? Was there an actor's name?
Isn't that Marjorie?
Yeah, it is, but I'm trying to think of the...
I love her. She's okay.
Let me look this up real quick.
I can't think
Natalie...
Dormer.
So she kills her in the process, and then her son jumps off of the fucking thing.
Because his
Which became a meme after a while, but what now?
Because his beloved wife is dead.
Yeah, right? Yeah. He fell hard for her, man. Like instantly.
He sure did.
Hmm.
And she's dead now.
That episode
he doesn't have any reason to live after that
point. Is so great because it's not just what happens, but the first 15 minutes of that episode there's almost no dialogue. There's a little bit of dialogue at the Sept, but they're like, "She's not here. This means something." Yada. But it's mostly just this piano droning, dong, 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 dong. And I'm so glad you picked that episode. It probably is the best episode of that whole show.
It's mine. And there's a lot of more famous episodes, I think, but that one I just remember afterwards, just going, "My God, how did they? This is a miracle. They pulled this one off." And it makes all the stuff that happens later on when they fuck up the last season even more puzzling when you see how good that episode.
I still say history is going to show it was the fault of the actors.
Really?
Well, this is my theory is the actors were fucking done with 14-hour night shoots
in
Iceland winter, and they were getting so expensive, and what that final season, I believe, should have been two or three seasons, but they crammed it all into one, and that's why everything feels so rushed and overpaced, and I think it came down to both cost and those actors not wanting to... I mean, especially that battle at Winterfell in the final season that is in pitch black darkness and you can't see shit unless you have a TV from the future.
Mm-hmm.
They shot that for months. Mm-hmm. Months and months and months. Some of these actors were going out into the cold, into the fucking snow. I think it's probably fucking grueling. I think...
Yeah.
I'm still in the camp that blames the creators. But
yep.
It'll be interesting to see if anything comes out about that, especially since they're making, 500 other Game of
Thrones. The next thing they go on to make is solid from beginning to end. That will go a long way towards making the Game of Thrones ending not necessarily their fault.
Mm-hmm.
That's the reason I'm more willing to... Like, you just said the reason I'm on my side, because everything was so great and expertly paced up until that last season. How could they drop the ball so badly? And maybe they did.
Mm-hmm.
That's entirely
possible. Hilarious is I was gone for, like, two and a half seasons and came back on season 7. It was the worst one.
Yeah,
like,
You chose poorly.
What do you got?
I don't remember what the fuck we're talking about.
Favorite episode of favorite TV show.
I put some cliches on there. Ham radio from Frasier. Talked about that before.
Mm-hmm.
The one with the embryos from Friends. Talked about that before.
Trivia episode.
That's the trivia episode.
Has very little to do with embryos.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah, the title's fucked up. But I decided to go with two other ones. I'm going to go with Walkabout from Lost.
Ooh, that's a great one.
I don't really care about spoiling Lost.
I don't think we need to worry about spoiling that.
It is the first episode that of the show, I think it was the fifth episode, that pulls the rug out from under you.
Mm-hmm.
This is the episode where, I'm just going to say it, you've been five episodes in, there's some kind of a smoke monster, there was an airplane crash, we're getting a little bit of, differences, people trying to decide how to live and how they're going to get food and water. And then the flashback, every episode has had flashbacks so far to the person's life before they're on the island. And this fifth episode is following John Locke, mm-hmm. the man in a wheelchair, or the man not in a wheelchair, flashes back
to before he got on the plane, he's wheelchair bound. Mm-hmm. He's been walking around this island with no problem, has made no mention of a wheelchair, but it cuts back to he wants to do this walkabout, this Australian killer walkabout, and they're like, you can't do it. And he's going, don't tell me what I can't do. And it pans around and shows him in a wheelchair, and I will never forget that sensation.
Yeah.
Of realizing this show is way ahead of me. Yeah. Now, that didn't always remain the case, but in that moment, I felt euphoria at like realizing this is so much deeper than I thought it was.
Yep.
Who else has changed? Oh, I'm getting goosebumps just now thinking about it. But there's also, it ties very much into my own stubborn streak. That whole don't tell me what I can't do kind of a moment really resonates with me. And so I was already on board, and then you showed me the wheelchair. My God. Mm-hmm. Okay. Then the other one I want to talk about is The Wire, Season 4, Episode 13. It's called Final Grades. It's the last episode of that season. The last episode of every Wire season ends with a montage that sort of shows you, in the coming weeks and months after what you've just watched, here's where everybody's at. Mm. And so one season, when McNulty gets busted down after the first season, it shows him on a boat in the montage. And you're like, oh, he's going to be a boat he's going to be striking distance in the next season. Well, the fourth season is the one that follows the school system and the mayor race. And the school system, we follow four boys who are all at the precipice, right, if you will. One is in foster care. It's Randy. One doesn't ever shower because he doesn't have a home or clothes. That's Dookie. Then you got Michael, who's been trying to get recruited, but people are trying to recruit him into this drug system, this crime system. I'm blanking on the other kid, like some kind of a moron. Oh, Naaman, who is the son of Weebay from a previous season, who's in jail. He's a rapper. I don't remember which one. He's a rapper.
Yeah.
One of those rappers.
Mm-hmm.
And so we follow these four boys, and the whole season, they're kids, right? So there's moments of joy, there's moments of camaraderie and friendship, but this broken place they live is lying in wait to claim them. And it's this foreboding thing all season long, right? And you get, if you're me, you get really attached to these kids. A lot of the characters in The Wire go season to season, but these kids are basically only in this season. And the montage shows you how badly it goes for all but one of them.
Yeah.
Now, this is the season where one of the cops has set up Hamsterdam, where he basically takes this uninhabited block of empty houses and decides to turn the other way to the drug trade. Mm. And so people can sell drugs there. People can buy drugs there. They essentially legalize drugs in this one area of Baltimore. He ends up getting fired for it. Probably should have. But he adopts Naaman with permission from the guy's father who's in prison because they know he's the most hot-headed and he is very close to becoming a life of crime and getting killed. That's the only happy ending in the montage, is you see him on the front porch with his new adopted father.
Hmm.
Everybody else's story is bad. Randy goes to a new foster home, but he witnessed a murder halfway through the season, and so he becomes known as a snitch. So as soon as he enters his new foster home, all of his brothers start beating the shit out of him.
Oh, shit.
Dookie is definitely on the street now forever and hopped up on heroin and doing drugs with some creepy old homeless person.
Mm-hmm.
And Michael is an assassin for the drug dealer, and you see him commit a murder. It is just a gut punch, man. Mm-hmm. After a season where so many flashes of hope. I'm talking way too long about this. I apologize.
No, I think it's an episode worth going into detail.
Yeah, thank you. There's so much hope shown, and then the end of that montage is just like one out of every four of these kids is probably fucked.
Yeah.
And it's systemic. And that's what The Wire's trying to show you by focusing on different parts of the municipality on each season. We did the newspaper in the fifth season. Just to show you how systemic this is. It's a gut punch. That is my favorite episode of The Wire, by bar none.
Yeah, the Hamsterdam thing is such an interesting addition or whatever it solves a problem, because the very beginning of that season they're talking about how the numbers are too high.
Yep.
And the cops are all like, what the fuck do you want us to do? I mean, we're doing everything we want, we can do here. this guy decides I'm going to just make this one block basically legal. It's one of those, every time you're you're in Amsterdam in that season, because you always hear somebody go WMDs. Is it Omar that drives up to this thing? He's talking to somebody and he goes, I don't want any part of this.
I think so.
If we start going here, we're all going to be into pokey, and then drives off, you know? That's a really good episode.
Oh, geez. Mine are going to seem shitty by comparison.
Yeah, you're right.
Can't wait.
We should quit.
Rick and Morty season 2 episode Pickle.
Now, if you want to lighten it up a little bit, and of course I still have not seen The Wire, so I'm just
you know what's funny? I know this sounds like pressure. The Wire is such a Barrett show. Mm. I mean, it's like it was made for you. And it's crazy that you haven't seen The Wire.
How many seasons is it?
Five.
Five seasons.
It's five seasons. All right. I'm going to do it. Mm-hmm. I'm going to do it.
You dig it the most.
You want to watch some fun stuff and some comedians at the top of their game do some parody. It's the Bunker episode of Documentary Now.
Oh.
It's the War Room. And I actually just did this recently. There was a side-by-side comparison on YouTube. I'll send it to you. Of the footage from James Carville in The War Room and George Stephanopoulos. And The Bunker with Bill Hader and Fred Armisen. And it's just absolutely exact. What they do is they pay homage to these things, but also elevate them. And, you know, Bill Hader is James Carville, essentially. Teddy Redbone. He just goes off. He's trying to add some stuff to a political ad. And he's like, maybe it's too negative. And he's like, here's what we do. He would say, maybe it's his last birthday in office. And he's like, well, that implies that we want him to die. He's like, no, it's his last birthday in office. All right, so here what we do. We do that, and then I want some creepy kids singing at the end of this thing. Creepy as shit, okay? And it's so good. And he goes through, George Stephanopoulos or Fred Armisen playing him is like, you think I'm like the quiet hunk? And she's like, that's what they call you. And Teddy Redbone, Bill Hader is like, yeah, I got some nicknames too, like the Texas Tornado, Suspected Arsonist. Fuck that up.
Suspected Arsonist.
Oh, it's so good. It's if you're going to watch what, I mean, the Juan Loves Chicken and Rice is probably the greatest episode as far as cinematically. But this one will make you laugh more. And I have to shout out the English Patient episode of Seinfeld.
Hey folks, this is Barrett. What you're about to hear has very little to do with the actual episode that I'm trying to describe. But enjoy it anyway.
Oh yeah.
Because there are so many fucking storylines in this. There is Elaine hating the English Patient, of course, and going to see it with Peterman. There's Jerry going down to Florida to help his dad out. Jerry goes down to Florida and meets Izzy Mendelbaum and ruins him and then ruins his son and then ruins his grandson and shit like that.
And it's
and then you've got Kramer with the Cubans, who are actually Dominicans. And so Kramer...
Well, their crepes too tight.
The greatest part of this episode, and I'll end with this, is where Kramer goes down to the Cuban embassy and he goes up and he says hello, and she's like, buenos dias. And he's like, oh, buenos dias. And he turns around, and there's this woman in dark glasses sitting motionless. And he looks back and he starts to talk to the reception, and then he takes one more look and he's like, what the fuck is that? And he gets the Dominicans to come up because they like
his
jacket.
Is that the same one where George's suit makes noise when he walks?
Yes.
That's what I thought.
God, there's so much going on in this fucking episode, yeah. Dude. It is the best.
Are the Dominicans the ones later who are in the gay pride parade and they're like, who? Who doesn't want to wear the ribbon?
No, those are the guys that tried to steal the armoire.
No, they did steal the armoire.
Who are related to the? I think they're connected to the presidential boys. The
Van Buren boys.
Van Buren boys.
I don't know if they are, but yeah, it's they come over when they're stealing the armoire in the Soup Nazi episode. They're like, "Oh, I like this," and he's like, "Oh, this would go perfectly. Go on and pick it up." And Kramer's like, "Hey, don't!" And he's like, who are you talking to? Are you talking to me? Or are you talking to him? Because you were obviously talking to one of us.
Is that the same episode?
Yeah, that's the
AIDS walk?
Because
No. AIDS Walk is later on.
Are you sure?
I said Gay Pride. I thought it was. I forgot it was the AIDS.
It is the AIDS Walk. Now they are homosexual, but yeah, he's like, hey, this guy doesn't wear the want to wear the ribbon. He's like, who does not?
Who doesn't want to wear the ribbon?
Anyway, that is the quintessential episode of Seinfeld.
All right.
Hey, you. Hey,
me?
You.
What did I do?
You and you.
Oh, no.
And you mm-hmm. at home.
Mm-hmm. And you
in the car.
And you.
Here's what you can do. You can go to our Patreon. And it's not like you just go and you're like, oh, I want to support the guys from Sincast. Because, of course, you like us.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what's not to like, right? Mm-hmm. But if you want to get stuff, right, you get everything early. You get Sincast early. You get the other podcasts early. You get bonus episodes. You get all of our content early. During Sin Week, you get all kinds of stuff thrown at you. You should go to our Patreon, patreon.com/cinemasins. Sign up to be a member of our Sin Club.
$3. $3, $5,
$10. $10. One of these days, I'm going to get it. We've only had it for 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
Sign up at any level, and you become a member of the community. You're going to love it. You get access to special Discord channels. Go to patreon.com.
All right. Well, that's going to do it for this week. Keep going to Sincast presented by CinemaSins on Facebook. We're also on CinemaSins Twitter, Music Video Sins Twitter, Discord, and SoundCloud. That's going to do it for this week. It's Chris Atkins and Jeremy Scott and Barrett Sher. We'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening. Comment on our episodes on our SoundCloud page. Check us out on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, and Reddit. And be sure to visit CinemaSins.com.
So I was browsing Netflix to see over the weekend if there was anything to watch. And the game was on there. But I don't know if you can see the thumbnail from here. On Netflix, it's got the game, and it's got some rando motherfucker, like, I don't know, the second person in the company that does the game as the thumbnail. It's not Michael Douglas. It's not Sean Penn. It's not even the clown.
I love when that happens.
It's nothing. So I was like, is this a different game?
Not even the clown. Like, the clown is a huge character in that
movie. Clown is pretty recognizable from that.
It's not even Kara, what's her name?
Oh, Deborah Kerr Unger, yeah.
No, dude. Like, I hate it when they do that because there's another Passengers, right? Like, with yes. Anne Hathaway
yes.
and there's another fucking, like, Romeo and Juliet that's not Romeo plus Juliet.
There's like, yeah. Yeah.
Like a newer one?
There's one with Hailee Steinfeld. It's pretty good.
I know. Is it really good?
Yeah. Well, she's good. She'll carry most anything.
Who's the guy?
I
don't know. Well,
I saw it.
It's like I went on Amazon and I wanted to get the Ethan Hawke Great Expectations.
Mm-hmm.
Put in Great Expectations. Didn't even give it a second thought. It came up. I was like, boom, bought it. Comes in and it's like some other like 2012 Great
yes.
Expectations.
I have been fooled many times
shit.
By that.
And it's probably got like one of the London brothers in it, right?
Probably got one of the London brothers. Yeah, yep.
I
haven't
awesome.
Even. It's got actual like people in it that I recognize, but
and that was the first one that came up, right?
Yeah, I don't think you can get the Quarron one really? On Blu-ray.
My favorite oh, thing is I have a Google phone, right? And so I have this news app. And every once or twice a week, the picture above a news article will not remotely match the news headline. So, like, it'll say, Delta variant spreading in 5 states, and there's a picture of Chris Pratt with a gun.
Yeah.
I'm like, well, algorithm messed
variant.
That one. Because somebody did the math wrong.
I want to clarify something. What is DC doing? So we've got Joker, but we're still continuing the DCEU, but we don't know if Cavill, and we're almost positive, Affleck is not on board, right? Because there's going to be an Aquaman 2. There's going to be a third Wonder Woman.
They're going to do the Flash, where they've got Keaton's Batman and rumored Affleck Batman and rumored Christian Bale Batman.
And that's
Miller, Ezra Miller, as the Flash, right?
And Annie Muschietti directing.
So that's everybody from the DCEU, but they're just ignoring the rest of it?
That doesn't count the Batman with Pattinson?
That's what I'm saying, yeah.
They're doing... Okay, this
Birds
is what
of
I
Prey,
think. They're
Suicide
doing
Squad?
Multiple verses, but instead of mingling like the MCU is going to do, they're just going to keep them separate. So the Joker is in a different timeline.
DC universe. It's still DC, but
Ezra Miller's Flash.
Okay.
And Robert Pattinson's Batman is in a different timeline from those two, from what I understand.
Do we know what Suicide Squad is going to be? Is that going to be tied into anything, or is that going to be?
I don't know. And I also know they're making a Batman Beyond something, like an animated movie or something that's going to be
for HBO or something.
I don't know. Right now, honestly, what DC is doing is shotgunning it. They're throwing
so there's
everything
no there's
out.
No plan.
No.
Okay.
And they've done it for so long that not having a plan has become the plan.
Okay, hang on 1 second. What was Joker in? Was he in Batman? What was Joker in the DCEU?
He wasn't.
He was just in Birds of Prey.
Unless you're
you mean Leto's Joker?
Yes, Leto's Joker. Sorry.
He's also in that fucking Snyder Cut too.
Yeah, but
he's in the Snyder. Yeah.
He's in he's in Suicide Squad.
Suicide Squad.
Yeah.
Okay. The Suicide Squad.
Yeah, and I do believe that is considered part of the DCEU.
Okay, but we don't know necessarily about Birds of Prey.
Birds of Prey is DCEU.
Okay. It's the same. Okay. I think Suicide Squad is probably also that, because Margot Robbie is playing Harley Quinn, the same character in all three of those
and
movies.
She's in the same timeline, presumably.
Presumably. In fact, she said something the other day that suggests this Suicide Squad takes place after the other one and Birds of Prey, because she said by this movie, Harley's come into her own. Like in Suicide Squad, she was Joker's girl, mm-hmm. and in Birds of Prey, she had to figure out how to be her own self, and mm-hmm. now in this movie, she's figured that out, and she's a whole different animal. So,
are you excited about Suicide Squad?
I am, man. It looks fucking bonkers.
Yeah, I'd like to see it.
I'm in.
I really like Birds of Prey. Like, every time I watch it, I like it more.
I watched a little bit of it last night. I like it more every time. Here's the thing with Birds of Prey, though, is the action scenes, when fucking Harley fights, they don't cut the camera.
I know. And apparently she's done a decent amount of her own stunts.
I don't understand why the MCU has to... Why can't Chris Evans learn how to do a cartwheel? Whatever the fuck. Why do they have to cut?
Let's have Cap do a cartwheel, right?
I'm just saying, there's no reason for it. But we've got 20 movies cut like that. And then Birds of Prey comes along, and they're like, I'm going to show... That's why I wrote that Sin and Cloud Atlas. When did the Wachowskis forget how to shoot action?
Exactly.
Like, you're fucked all the way through. That's the reason. You need a performer that can do more than half a second of an action move at once. And that's why Margot Robbie trains her ass off to be able to do that stuff. And that's why I made the cartwheel joke about Chris Evans. He clearly puts in the weight time.
Yeah.
Why can't they train him on fights?
Counterpoint, Scarlett Johansson this morning, I saw that she had said, you know what, we should focus on the acting and let stunt people do stunts.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
And I understand that. But, like, you can't do a couple of karate chops and a fucking kick
or
something.
Well, we know
she
can cock guns.
She can cock the shit out of that gun.
It's true. Chris Evans told us plainly in Scott Pilgrim versus the World what he does with these action scenes. He lets his other guys do it while he gets blazed in his Winnie.
Blazed in his Winnie.
I mean, yeah, when you see the stuff that, you know, Keanu has been doing, and, you know, even if it's hard to get insurance for some of these crazy stunts, you don't need a crazy amount of insurance for
just
fucking
do
hand-to-hand
what
combat.
What they're doing. Oh, see, I both hate and love what they're doing on this new Indiana Jones movie, because they've got like a hyper-realistic, like, prosthetic mask on the stuntman.
Really?
And he looks like, from 30 feet out, he looks like Harrison Ford.
Really? I did not know this.
And, well, Harrison Ford's 112.
No,
he
I
can't
understand
do
that,
this
but
stuff.
I didn't realize
he broke his leg just contemplating a stunt the other day. Mm-hmm. But,
oh, shit.
And so, but I hate this because essentially it's not really Indiana Jones so much anymore, but I also love it because it's perfect for those kinds of moments. We can have great action that doesn't necessarily cut, but I'm not pulled out of the movie by seeing the stuntman who clearly doesn't look like Harrison Ford.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I'm for this.
Yeah. because there were a lot of Instagram videos of her like pulling semi tires and yeah. breaking trees over her knee and shit, doing cartwheels.
Doing cartwheels. Mm-hmm. As long as you can do a cartwheel, that's right. fine. And do it in space.
You can do any action scene if you know how to do a cartwheel.
I want to see Chris Evans try to do a cartwheel now.
I bet he does a perfect cartwheel. I bet he could do an amazing
cartwheel.
I don't
think he's too top heavy.
He's too top heavy?
Yeah.
No, not anymore. Actually, you don't know what he's packing. He may be... He may be just right. He may have center of gravity just right.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
He's got a.
He does a cartwheel. You see this giant dong.
Yeah. mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Oops.
Looks like the letter M.
Imagine there being outtakes of the Watchmen movie, and Dr. Manhattan is doing cartwheels in the background. His blue penis is just
funk,
flopping
funk.
Like a extra.
Funk.
Did you see Seth Rogen's story yesterday about Paul Rudd?
Mm-hmm.
My God.
That's so awesome.
You see it, Barrett?
I do.
With the back rub? Jesus. I feel like Paul Rudd is the like just the best dude ever. Like, I want to know him.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like,
people said the same thing about
No
context.
Don't you put that evil on me, Ricky Bobby.
No context. I love it.
There's a reason I scheduled it at 3:30. If I scheduled it at, you know, if I would have scheduled it earlier if, you know, but I felt like I had planned everything out for the next couple of weeks, my writing, my everything, whatever. I was like, today is going to be a day that I'm not going to do shit except home stuff and whatever.
Right.
And so I know I'm not writing today. I know that Wednesday might be a writing day because I'm going to have to get Mortal Kombat soon.
Mm.
And Tuesday looked like the day, even though I don't like doing stuff on podcast day. And it's like 3:30. Is that good? I try to make sure with people who are working, is this okay with you guys? Because I don't want this bullshit where like we can come early. I really want to come early.
Yeah, all right.
Can we just do this another time? Like I've gotten that a lot of times.
Me too. Yeah, fuck them.
But anyway,
fuck them hard.
I know they don't want to come out here. I know. I understand. 3:30. They might be getting into some traffic shit they don't want to get into. They may have a party they want to go to or something. But fucking hell, man.
Yep.
Don't have your hours that way.
Yeah. Yeah. Go shut down your fucking business.
You should go back to Thompson Lane.
Yeah.
Shut down this fucking business.
What would be even funnier is if I drove out there during the time they're supposed to be here.
Hey, are you guys there yet?
Yeah.
Can you call your guys and see if they're out of my house?
Yeah.
I drove down here so that we could drive me back to my house.
That's like Seinfeld going down to the office to heckle the
heckler. It still cracks me up that Seth Rogen, like, legit thought he had a shot to get cast in that role, like, because he wrote it.
And they
wrote it years before they made it, and he tried, he, like, was still pulling for it. Even though he was clearly too big and too old.
What's the age difference between Jonah Hill and Seth Rogen?
I don't know if it's big, but in that movie, it looks like 8 years.
Yeah, especially with like the fucking handlebar. What's your guess on Jonah Hill's age? I'm going to say 39.
Yeah, you're closer, I bet. Seth Rogen's probably 44.
No, he's 37. Okay.
Oh, that's a 36. That's pretty close.
Seth Rogen looks like a crusty 44, though. If he is.
Chris, how old is Seth Rogen?
I think he was born in 82.
He is 39. He's 2 years older than Jonah Hill.
Wow, but in Superbad, he looks 8 years
older. He looks like he's... Yeah.
That's not... Well, maybe that explains why he was pushing so hard to play the role.
Right, yeah,
because he's like, age-wise, I'm only 2 years older than this guy.
Well, so in 2008? Superbad?
I don't remember.
2007.
So he's 25, right?
And Jonah Hill was 23, and he was playing a fucking high schooler.
Yeah, but Jonah Hill looks like a 16-year-old in that movie.
He does.
He completely pulls it off.
Absolutely does.
I don't know if we're going to be able to keep any of this, though.